I understand there are two people out in the driveway there, standing outside, wanting to come in. They're outside, Jimmy. They're out there, but it's... Today we are starting to celebrate our third anniversary of the forming of the All Faith Fellowship. If the air conditioner doesn't interfere, can you hear me clearly? Good. Okay. When we started, it was just a fulfillment of a master's dream and another person's dream and vision. But it has come a long way in a short space of time, on solid ground, slowly building itself on the nickels and dimes and the generous love of everyone. We got a long way to go, but we are building primarily ourselves first and the environment in which to grow. There are four basic things that are important in a spiritual life. One, environment. The 9 months when the person is in the womb, that is conditioned by the parent. The action and reaction of two human beings in marriage and when they are pregnant during those 9 months, all their suppressed emotions and anxiety are electrically carried over into the offspring. So we in turn are in a way conditioned by the environment. This is very difficult to break. It's not so easy. One can wish for it to break. One can hope and pray for it to break. But even Nicodemus had to go to Master Jesus and ask him, how does a person enter consciousness? And he told him, unless he be born again, he cannot enter the kingdom of consciousness or God. In today's language, we can say, unless a man does not understand the prenatal state of his existence and its implications, it is not possible for him to break the magnetic field force surrounding him like an eggshell. So Jesus told him he had to be born again. Most of us interpret that to mean born of the Spirit, going through some type of baptism or so forth. Born again, when Nicodemus said to him, come on. Can you hear? There's lots of room in front here. he told Nicodemus he has to be born again, and Nicodemus said to him, do I have to go back into the womb a second time? And the Master said, no, born of the Spirit. But that is a definite process of breaking the prenatal state. And then you have 21 years after you're born, conditioned by environment in which you live in. So actually, it's very difficult to pursue a spiritual life if you are preconditioned by these forces. And the very first thing we have to prepare is our environment, because environment is stronger than our willpower. The next principle is the breath. That was the very first thing you took at birth. Man could not live without the breath. God breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Man does not have a soul. He is soul. He has a chemical body comprising of 16 basic chemical elements. And he has an electrical body and an ideational body. The three acting as one is soul, a direct image of the Creator, which is a threefold principle itself. We are linked to the Creator by breath. It's the only important thing in our lives, here and now. If you do not take the next breath, they either cremate you or bury you. That is how simple spiritual life is. It's not complicated. It's involved with nowness. It's involved with being. But there was a song made, when you breathe the air, you cry. That is sung. That is word. That is communication. We are expressing the divine desire in the form of sound through the human body. And that sound telegraphs to creation a need, a concern, a responsibility. Many of us may not be able to respond, recognize, or act upon that communication. But nature has worked its own way that we must be fed. So we notice that the baby is placed to the breast of the mother. Equally true, nutrition plays an important part in the spiritual life. It plays a part in building the spiritual temple. Then there is discipline. During the period of 1 to 21, we go through four phases of acting out our willpower. First phase is the automatic willpower, which occurs in us at the moment we take the breath and respond to the environment. Up to a certain stage, the willpower after that moment is unthinking will. The unthinking willpower then is regulated and guided by the thinking willpower of the parent. We live out the unthinking state. We don't think for ourselves when we're children at a certain stage. We are guided from 9 months on, right through to a certain stage where we are hurt and must respond. Equally true in the spiritual life, we have to be guided on to a certain level. We have to have our heartaches before we begin to think. From the unthinking state, we go into what is called a blind, rash, active will. And most of us have passed through that blind, active will in trying to push our way around, not responding to the thinking will of others. Then we begin to get some hard knocks. We start to slow down. We start to take stock of ourselves. This is the birth of the thinking will, the reasoning will. And then we are at par with our parents. We can think. From here on in, very few go beyond the thinking will. Equally true in a spiritual path, we start out with breath, nutrition, guidance by discipline, until we come to a point when we can think objectively in a spiritual way. Thinking way in the spiritual life, we study the lives of the masters that have passed on and those who are alive and have passed on in a thinking way, objective way. Then comes the divine will or dynamic will in a human being, being master of oneself. Equally true in a spiritual way, we must make contact with other human beings who are vibrating or thinking in that dynamic will. This process is the result of spiritual life. Our idea is to create this environment, grow in the environment, discipline ourselves in the environment by actually living the responsible life and raising the thinking consciousness to the dynamic will of a self-realized person. To speak of it, it's okay. To read it, it's okay. To write about it, it's okay. To talk about it, it's okay. To hear about it, it's okay. To do it is the only important thing. And the very last action you do before you kick the bucket, that's the one that makes the biggest tally. You can have a whole host of negative karma prior to that last act. It can pull you out, like a thief on the cross. It requires a tremendous amount of conscious action to recognize and react. Officially, the retreat starts tonight. And those who are not familiar with the program will go over it, clear up our minds. In the morning, our first meditation, sunrise, begins out on the retreat grounds at 4 o'clock. It goes up to 6:30, is that it? And then we'll have breakfast at then. What's the schedule? Say 7:30. About that, out there in the retreat. And after breakfast, go 8 o'clock. Everyone will be assigned their seva for the day. Seva is the service to the Lord. God is the only employer. You don't have any employer but God. If we are creating the environment, we are creating the environment to be self-employed by the Creator Himself. Who are we working for? Not for me, or my wife, or for yourself. You're striving to serve the Lord, who is the creator and the employer and the paymaster. The dollars and cents that He gives us in this physical world are nothing in comparison to the inner awareness through seva. Seva is the key to devotion too. That devotion then leads to realization. If you can perform seva with the right attitude, you have raised yourself beyond measure, because seva transcends charity. Seva is the charity in action. Charity is not necessarily giving or expecting. Charity is seva in action, which is service. This is the channeling of yourself. So, since the process is to learn, and we're learning at various levels, at various speeds, with various interactions, we will discover that we have tremendous mental blocks, and we have to unravel them, and we find out sooner or later in seva that you can unravel it pretty fast. Many of you will feel some strange odd headaches, upset stomach, and some funny sensations while you are at this retreat. Rest assured, your karma has been burnt up. To attend the retreat just for the session in which you are involved, the mere exposure to the vibratory forces of seva burns up karma. Even when you left your homes to come by airplane or by traveling on a car, seva was already in action. The vibratory force is in action already, because it is the main purpose of bringing about devotion. Now, Jesus said we weed out the sheep from the goat. The only way you can prove this to yourself is through seva. If we can weed out those who can stick it out, or those who have to run. Seva is not a dictatorial process. It is not something that someone is pulling you by the nose to perform. It is your responsive relationship to the environment to function efficiently. At the same time, with the attitude of love. Therefore, seva is skill in action. The mere skill to perform an action, the mere love to perform the action. What better way to perform the action than chanting or singing? In the olden days, when they would lower or bring a ship down to the river or to the sea, they would do what? They would sing to pull, because the vibratory rate of chanting could actually cause certain vibrations, could cause that wood or object to levitate. You will find through seva some strange miracles will happen. Telekinesis will occur through seva. Many different forms of extrasensory forces can start occurring around you through seva. This is the way the Lord teaches us that our vibratory power of the mind can regulate matter. Now, the very first level that the initiate or the individual is trying to master is energy acting on matter. We are matter already, and we exert some influence on it mechanically through the physical body. But when we exert energy, that is a conscious control of the forces within the mechanism by channeling the mind through chanting, through song, then we execute now energy acting on matter. We then can do things with the energy in ourselves. The human body is a battery. It has to be recharged. It's recharged by resting itself. It's recharged by meditating. And it's recharged by working. It's recharged by seva. It's recharged by exercise. Seva is a composite of all the other forms of recharging. It's a composite of meditation, working, chanting, concentrating, contemplating. It is the one process that pulls all the loose ends together in you. It releases all the toxins out of your system at the same time. And you find out pretty soon how clumsy you are, because seva makes you recognize your shortcomings and you want to improve upon it. And pretty soon you find out how you love your neighbor or you dislike him. That's the interesting part of seva, your service. This is known to be the transforming power of conscious action. After seva, there is lunch at the kitchen. Then in the afternoon, we have classes. Is that it? The awareness classes will be carried on here. And then we have a period of exercise and dinner at the kitchen. And then the evening meditation and classes. During that time, we may have different people saying out their own personal observations on their own awarenesses. To follow the spiritual path, you have to consider all facets of it. Not the mere renunciation of the world or the mere involvement with the world, but you have to consider your equanimity of all things. When we renounce, we can sit in a corner and don't do anything, and we can be pretty smug about our holiness. It ain't worth 2 cents. not as far as the holiness goes. It's like a man sleeping in a bare cheek, or like a nostril with his head in the ground. But if he takes the same relationship and apply it to the outside world, then he's got some balance. But then there is conflict. He has to bring about the, or reconcile the conflict. If he's too over-involved outside, and he doesn't spend some time inside, then he's going to get in tremendous offshoots. But if he brings the balance between action and self-chosen seclusion, then we have equanimity realization. We have a force field for the first time. During a retreat, the mind must have some particular thought for the day. Otherwise, it wanders into lots of different cross currents of thinking. Silence is a great part of our inner awareness. It requires a great deal of silence to be inner aware. And to be able to be silent consciously, to do that, you need some thought or idea for the day. In the Eastern country, they've used mantra or affirmation. Equally true in English, you can take some affirmation or thought pattern and make it the thought of the day. But the thought of the day is not powerful enough until you begin to express it during the day. To merely repeat it, no matter what it is, to merely repeat it alone is not enough. You must express it in some form. You must be able to register it on some other human being, a plant, a stone, a human being, or the elements around you. You must be able to bring this idea into effect. You must be able to have some extrasensory occurrence within the 24 hours to know that energy, which is the conscious spirit, is working through you in the environment. Each of us is in the process of pruning off our churchianity to discover our Christianity. We all come from different types of churchianity, but very few of us have found the grassroots of Christianity. And Christianity does not begin with Jesus. It goes way back into cosmic time, the Christ intelligence in man. But we are caught up in the various church movements. We have different relationships. We have to prune them back. Pruning back the tree does not destroy the tree. Pruning off the consciousness of the churchianistic concepts of religion does not destroy the religion of man. It's the first time man discovers a science in his religion, an actual method or principle in which he can work with to bring about internal changes of his physical mechanism. Now I've shut my wad, as they say in the cowboy language. Now it's up to you to ask the questions before we have a little meditation. Any questions you want to ask?
I
Huh?
At 4,
and we leave here. No, well, let's look at this way. We have to get there by 4 or 4:30 the latest, because it takes a little while to get there. So by the time everybody gets up and around, we head off in the direction. We're allowing a little time to be, but we want to be there at least 4, because that's the time the vibrations are very strong. You see, the masters in the Himalayas are beaming all the time to the world. But they also have an unbroken link with themselves in their own meditative process, and that particular time is ideal from 3 to 6. You see, within that time we usually get your 2.5 hour meditation. You see, you first start out a little meditation, then eventually you work up to your first 1/10 portion to the Lord, your tithing. And that's the ideal time to perform tithing. Tithing is giving back to the Lord a 10th portion of his breath to us. So between 3 and 6 you have 2.5 hours to work with to give you enough time to get around. Then we do our exercises and finish the meditation. Yes? Huh? Yes. 9 months you're in the womb, you went into many different postures. In fact, the 84,000 postures of Hatha Yoga can be seen inside the womb. A human being is the most unique creature. And a woman especially carries another offspring, carries everything in this universe locked up inside. From the time the sperm made contact with the ovum, a vast change has occurred. It does not occur in a man because a man cannot be pregnant. But it occurs in a woman. The 84,000 life forms we have, the 84,000, and Hatha Yoga has 84 basic postures and 1,000 variations for each posture. So the human fetus goes through all 84,000 before it becomes a complete human being at the end of 9 months, or in the case of premature birth, but never before 7 months. 7 months is the permissible premature period. So posture is not just something somebody invented. Posture is a process the Creator organized in his creation to indicate various levels of consciousness in the creation. When we can realize this, a person may not be able to perform a posture, yet if he enters a high state of consciousness, you can see him in a posture that the yogis do consciously. This is because he has done it already in the fetus. Right through the pregnancy stage, you've done all of them in the process of changing and forming. This occurs. Various movements inside there. And if you look at some strange fetus that they throw away or in alcoholic jars, you'll see some of them are biting their toes, some of them got their head locked around their head, some are twisted from heel to head. And all the shapes are possible in that state. But what is necessary in the meditative process is certain basic ones to keep the body healthy. And we do emphasize that at a retreat. The primary purpose of the retreat is to keep building from the time you start to the end of the session that consciousness, to really get the full impact of it. We will cover a great deal of therapy in many forms, and lots of us are going to burn up a great deal of karma. So, don't. Yes? Yeah. We can't hear you.
Is this the karma from not eating properly, or is this the karma from anything you made them wrong?
The karma that is occurring in a retreat is the unfinished karma of your past life that is being brought to the surface to be burnt out at the retreat. You are the result of your last life desires. Those unfinished ones must come to the surface through this life form. During this particular incarnation. Now, the moment you are on the spiritual path, those conditions or causes come to the surface quicker by the exposure to a spiritual life and an exposure to a retreat process. So they come to the surface quicker. Again, if you're an initiate, it speeds up faster too. Because the process of initiation tells you what will occur in 1 year from now occurs exactly in one holy breath from now. Right? So you find that you are facing the karma that is unfinished, coming to the surface and releasing itself. But it's better to work it out now in the physical frame than to wait until you are in a physical condition when you can't handle it. You might have abused the body to a point where you can't handle it, then who will there can you turn to? Maybe there'll be somebody then to turn to, but yeah. You have to look at it this way. You could not be exposed to this particular process if you weren't ready for it. The initiate life is not for everybody right away. They have to come to it, and we don't go out and convert people to bring them to it. Our motto is not to convert people, convert ourselves. And you will be brought to this process by the masters themselves. We don't choose the master chooses us. They are the ones who know if we have the capacity to work with them. Or we have a stubborn will that will block them, then they will hit us on our head or pull the rug out from under us. Many a times I had the rug pulled out from under me, you see. Lesson number one in spiritual life, you eat your words back. Yes?
What about
can somebody repeat the question so
what
far?
What about bad karma that you may have generated in this life? Is it possible to work it off?
Yes, it's possible to work it off in this life. And if you don't work it off, it's like an investment that didn't pay off. And you die before it paid off, and your inheritors may have to collect it. But in karma, there are no inheritors. You are the inheritor. See, we generate a desire, and the desire may not come into fulfillment while we're alive, when we pass out of the frame. How is that desire going to complete itself? We're using energy, just as much as we use this power in this house. Energy in this universe is endless, it's infinite. It can't be lost, it can't be destroyed. So definitely it stands to reason that if we monitor it by the mere thought, the mere idea of doing something and have this energy released and then physically incapable to complete it and leave the frame, that energy would have to recycle itself in some way. It has to come back. Well, for those who don't understand too much about it, let me explain. If you were to cut this hand off, I will still feel these five fingers in the hand because the electrical nature of my hand will be there. Anyone who has had that experience, people can tell you that their fingernails are get dirty. I think there's someone here whose father can vouch for that. Right? Okay. The finger is missing, but he still feels dirt in that invisible nail. If this is an actual thing that is going on, the electrical power can die. And that electrical power is still feeling, and is still relating, and correcting, and directing itself. So even if this physical frame is all chopped up into a hamburger meat, you will still be there. You're just carrying it to 1 degree further, from losing a finger to the mashing the whole body up into a pulp. The energy is still there, it cannot go away because the craving is there. We're dealing with thought force, creative power. Man is a creative process. He is soul, he doesn't have a soul. Yes.
If we you expressed energy.
Yes. 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 All right. Thought is infinite. We are a thought. Well, that is a wrong term. We are not annihilating or annihilating our thought forms. We're not trying to do that to ourselves. We're trying to reevaluate the usage of the creative force in ourselves, which is thought power. How we abused it, how we misused it to generate an environment that is hostile for us to exist in. The hostility of the environment is the result of our internal wrong use of the creative power. Otherwise, the environment cannot be hostile to us. You know, they said until Cain and Abel or Adam and Eve did something wrong, the animals went into chaos. Before that, all the animals sat down together. The lion sat down together and the sheep sat down together. They never killed each other. But when Adam and Eve made some mistake through their desire pattern, everything started to change. What it's saying is this: hostility in an environment cannot exist if there is no malfunctioning in the thinking. It can only exist if there's malfunctioning in thinking, because the thinking is utilizing creative energy, and creative energy would automatically result how you abuse it, and you will get that particular result facing you. If you sat down near a lion, he knows only one thing: you want to eat him, because he smells the fact that you are an eater of animals. His life is at stake in your presence. Now, if you have no craving, physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual, to consume the flesh of the animal, he can't smell that. He can't even begin to generate a hostility to you, because you are generating a concern for his existence. And because you have a concern for his existence, he is satisfied. Therefore, he cannot react in a state of hostility. He can only react in a state of calmness, love.
Everywhere, audible life, current life. It passes through the mouth of God, the medulla oblongata, our thalamus in the brain, through a process of bioprovision of the brain, just like a plant. By the process of the Holy Breath in the time, we will draw this energy with us, nourishing this physical spirit. Living our soul in the different realms of creation. Our journey takes us into many levels of existence. In this age, we are seeing ourselves living, reaching out to the stars. It's not our first time. Memory is lost for many of us. For those who are aware, there's many journeys and there's lots of journeys. And they all coincide. In the greatest evidence. In his show, he has written it a long time ago. And we are merely the actors in the Oriental Cinematic. We don't have bad karma, we have bad actors. Okay? three, four different flocks. Three different shepherds. Or one shepherd. Or three flocks belonging to three different shepherds and one shepherd standing in the midst. Yet the flock that belongs to that one shepherd only is to gather on. The other two will never go near. That is the same way the Creator has it set up. The Father is the shepherd. We are the flock. We gather around him because we know the Father by initiation. Otherwise, we stay away from him.
Oh.
this thought be on. What is the image that the initiate must carry in his mind? Questions came up today about the Buddhist teaching, which states that they believe in reincarnation but don't accept the soul as existing. How can these two things reconcile themselves? Is that it? There is a moon in the sky. It is shining on the ground. I take 10 glasses made of different colors, different shapes, different sizes, different thicknesses. I put different quantities of water in them. How many moons do I have? Right, you only have one moon but 10 reflections. Now you see how the Buddha was conveying his knowledge. Our reflections are our incarnations of the one God. So why do we reincarnate? What causes us to reincarnate? What causes the moon to reflect in the glass? The water. What causes us to reincarnate is the fluctuations of mind, desire. We have to break that. Now if we break the glass with the water, what becomes of the reflection? They are gone, and the one moon remains. When we break the desires in our body and become desireless, the one God principle remains. Therefore, there is no more reincarnation. When you break the glass, the water is gone. Where? Back into the atmosphere. And the glass has to recycle itself back. So it goes back to pure energy, consciousness. Equally true, when you break the desire patterns of this mechanism and become desireless, unattached, we enter now immortality or resurrection. There is no more reincarnation. So the soul is an image of the Creator. Come, let us make man in our own image. So if we are an image of the Creator, then that image is held strictly by desire. The Creator has to desire us. You realize that now? When you break that desire by realizing yourself, you have liberated your will. You have returned back to your true image. You resurrect. immortality is a reality. But we have to realize the process to become immortal. Now, the Creator cannot start a process without leaving an example. So, all around us, He has placed many examples of immortality. Have you ever seen petrified wood? That's the very first expression of immortality. Let's think of it. It's neither wood, it's neither stone. But it's petrified. It does not decompose. So, its immortality is established. It cannot reproduce itself. Yet it adheres to the shape of a tree and seems to acquire some of the qualities of the stone. Now let's go to the caterpillar. It's cellular life. And it eats its way through life. Then one day it starts to spin its own cocoon or shroud around itself. When it does that, it goes into a state of metamorphosis and comes out now a butterfly. Cellular object, yet that object does not decompose. There is no such thing as a rotten butterfly. The change has occurred in us. The body has become immortal. The caterpillar has become mortal in a butterfly. It's permanent. So we have immortality now in the cells. We have immortality in the plant in the form of the petrified wood. We have immortality in the cells of the worm, cellular life, in the form of the butterfly from the caterpillar. Now we must come to the primate, man. Is it possible for man to be immortal? Or is it that he is destined to recycle or rebirth? The Buddha says you get off the wheel of it, 84, or the wheel of life, when you cease to have desires. But what do you become? You don't reincarnate no more. But what happens to you now? What physiological change occurs? This is the teaching of the Buddha that has not been carried further on by the very followers of Buddha. They did not go into the details of understanding immortality. So they did not write about it. They just said, man enter nirvana. But they are talking of immortality. Only they did not go into much detail. So we have immortality now, again as the image. Thank you, Buddha. You're telling me that you did teach immortality, but your people did not understand it. not blame the Buddha, blame the restless mind. What more proof can we have? The restless mind can create all types of images. So the image we carry in ourselves, and that's what we're discussing today in our awareness, what is the image we carry in ourselves? It's not the image of reincarnation. It's the image of immortality, resurrection. This is the mental image we have to carry. I go over again about the example. If you have one moon in the sky and you take 10 glasses, different sizes, different shapes, different colors, different thicknesses and weights, and fill them with different quantities of water, you'll still have one moon but 10 reflections in the glasses. We are merely a reflection in the mind of the image. But in the whole structure, we are this one sun or the one moon in the sky. We and the Father are one all the time. The Father is playing this wonderful game with himself. He loves to entertain us with his games of immortality. So the soul is eternal. We don't have a soul. We are. Therefore, when reflected into the mind function of this universe, it appears that there are many souls here, but it's all one. One big universal soul. There is really no separation. It is all functioning here. The image you carry in the mind is mortality. It is this image of immortality made Master Jesus say these words: "No man take my life from me. I have the power to lay it down and pick it up." He is speaking of a confidence in certain principles embodied in creation. And because these principles are universal, they can be realized as soon as we identify with them. But you cannot identify if you don't have the right image. The image is very important. Now let's take the word image. We will see some interesting facts about it. One, the letter I is the first letter in it. Let's put a hyphen. Age. If you look at the word, the sounds are very familiar. I, or one, is a universal awareness. God is I. God is I am. You know, there's the F is following it. And God is the eternal age. Who can be older than God? And yet, I by itself is still the one God. And the word mage or magi, wise. Three wise men are the three mages. In your I-ness, all the wisdom exists, all your wiseness exists, and only in your I-ness can you draw wisdom from. You cannot draw wisdom from no other source but from your I-ness. It is in your I-ness you carry the wisdom. I am that I am. Now we can adjust our awareness to another level of awareness by identifying with the I. Now we take the word immortality. We're running into another I. Again, we have the I, the M. I am, the I image, the I amness of ourselves. Mortal is something that breaks down. Age is something that breaks down. Yet, in the same wiseness of the I am, we have continuity, endless age, endless existence. Do you see? Within yourself, nowhere else but within yourself, endless existence continues to be within you. Is being able to draw from it. The purpose of the existing is to shift your awareness, shift it back to its true image. What is the true image? The true image is body, which is physical. Electrical or astral or will. Causal or ideational, which is spirit. We are made in that image. We are made in that composite. Physical, comprised of 16 elements plus trace elements, and astral or electrical, comprised of 19 elements and a causal or ideational comprised of 35 elements. Our Creator then placed those 35 in a state of polarity, and we have 70. That's an inner and outer universe in polarity. And this polarity is sustained by a dualistic process. So 35 plus 35, inner and outer, gives us 70. Dualistic process gives us 2, that's 72. In the Hebrew Kabbalah, or Kabbalah, there are 72 names of God, or 72 aspects of God's self. We are made in that image and sustained by that image all the time. So we're going back and trying to understand what the composition is. As we understand the composition, then we can understand the process. If we don't understand the composition, we can't understand the process. We have to have first the image before we can break down and find out its composition. Then we must have the necessary process to bring about a change in the human mechanism. The human mechanism primarily is a composite of carbon. That is the major portion of our mechanism, a carbon base. Now, in your scriptural language, you know it as ash. Are you familiar with a wonderful statement? Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. We are a carbon-based mechanism. Because of that, it carries age. How do we measure the age of our planet or any object now? By a carbon reading. So do you see now interesting thing about image and immortality? Science hasn't gone too far and scriptures haven't gone too far. Something is occurring. They are dovetailing for the first time. They are merging for the first time. Because they are merging for the first time, we have to be able to prune off the churchianity of religion and the extremism of science to get a new perspective of the true existence as one. The scientist and the saint both seek to know the truth. matter what the cost is. The scientist experiments in the outer realm, the saint experiments in the inner realm. But there's a point where they'll meet. And they will always meet in the I. There is nowhere else for them to be but in the I. The I is the leveling ground or meeting place for the scientist and the saint or master. As by Jesus said, I and my Father are one. You see me, you see the Father. The mystic and the scientist must eventually merge or meet in the I-ness. Once we understand this, then we are ready for the next process. The process is the most intricate thing. We can break it down and find out that we are carbon. And we can recognize this carbon base. And if you burn any object, the result is an ash, and the ash is carbon. Charcoal is produced from burning plant life. When you burn plant life or any object, you get charcoal, the carbon, and ash. Okay. Charcoal cannot reflect light. It doesn't allow light to pass. Yet there is another type of carbon. Charcoal is very soft. It'll powder in your hand. There's another type of carbon that will not powder in your hand. In fact, it's the hardest carbon possible. It's a diamond. Now in the diamond you'll see something. You notice something? D hyphen I hyphen A M hyphen O N hyphen D. We have suddenly awakened our consciousness to this carbon. How did this carbon come into existence? The dualistic nature inherent in creation within the I amness. Organize the diamond, brought about a divinity in the diamond, a divinity in the carbon. It brought about an immortality in the carbon by the intense heat. You notice I use the word heat. Going to be very important in the process to understand this term heat. How we bring about changes in ourselves, changes in the image. There are two ways to preserve something. Freeze it or cook it. Those are two ways you can preserve something. And preservation is immortality. Because you are suspending it indefinitely. The whole universe around us is cold, according to the astronauts. Yet the planets that are giving off light are all burning. The stars at night, they're all burning. The sun is burning. So we have hot and cold in constant conflict. It is when we come to man, as a physical being, we find the hot and the cold are in a state of truce in the human body. If you're too hot, they call it a fever. If you're too cold, you have the chills. There has to be a specific balance between the hot and the cold in a human body to be in balance. But in nature, there is no such thing. In nature, the universe is throwing off all the radiation and throwing off all the freezing at the same time. Yet, if we were to break through what is called the norm of nature in the cosmic way, we will move through both heat and cold. The scientist is hoping to pass through tremendous heat waves or radiation waves, tremendous cold waves, with different insulated materials. Material that will resist one to the other. The saint is doing the same thing too. He is bringing about an immunization process by both temperatures. Now, if the Creator would make us and not place all these principles in us, we would not be able to recognize them. He has placed hot and cold in us. Most of us breathe in hot and let out cold, right? Do we breathe in cold or let out hot?
Cold,
we breathe in cold and let out hot.